From famous landmarks to curious designs in the earth, your view from a window seat can reveal a lot about the places you're flying over. Geologist James Jackson teamed up with writer Daniel Matthews to provide an illustrated guide to the many landscapes you'll see beneath the major flight corridors across America. James joins us from Portland to point out his favorite air routes that you can explore the next time you fly across the country. Jim, thanks for being here.
Oh, Rick, thank you very much for having me.
This book is incredible. I just had so much fun looking through it. What inspired you to go to all the work to really document all the views from flying all over the United States?
Oh, probably too many hours spent on airplanes away from home more than anything else. But my initial flights were, you know, as a child, I guess I was 5 or 6 in the early 50s, and we would fly from New York to Kansas City to visit my grandparents. My father loved flying, and he loved looking out the window, and wherever we went, he would point things out as we flew along, and I think that stayed with me really until I became a geologist and then studied the interpretation of air photos. And I thought for sure somebody had written this book 30 years ago, but when I went looking for it, I never found it. So when I finally had some time, having retired, sat down with Dan Matthews, and we put together a proposal, and about 4 years later, the book was published.
Thumbing through your book and imagining flying across all this territory, it occurred to me you can learn a lot, not only about geology, but about geography from a plane's vantage point. You know, you can actually see minerals from the air, can't you?
Well, you can't so much see minerals, but you can see how the land or the earth underneath the land has either been deformed or is being deformed or is being transformed by geologic processes. Now, I know that's a big mouthful, but when we go across the mountain ranges in the east, I'm thinking of the Appalachians, the east side of the Appalachians, the rocks have really been tortured, and they've thrown up the ridges and the valleys that we see in Pennsylvania and Virginia and the Carolinas. These ridges and valleys from the air look like they're folded. And in fact, they are folded. And then when you get out to the Midwest, really what you're seeing is, depending on where you are, a landscape which was previously covered by glaciers, and the traces are there. It's there to be seen. And south of that landscape, we see a land which was largely created by the drainage as those glaciers melted. And then, of course, when you get out in the west, you see the big mountains and the processes that created those.
Your book talks about looking specifically at things you'll see along certain flight corridors, but also your book talks in general terms how you can notice a delta or a canyon or a volcano and so on.
Yeah, well, the idea that we had was to take the routes which are most popular that account for 80 or 90% of all passenger miles and give you something specific to look at every 20 minutes, so about every 200 miles. But of course, you've got 20 minutes between spots, and there's things to see. And so in each of our entries, we tried to give you a context that would place that locality either before you saw it or after you saw it. And so that's why we have the general discussions as well as the very specific discussions.
So talking in general terms, you can see land patterns, state boundaries, homestead borders. What would you look for in that regard?
Well, you can't really see state boundaries unless they're a river.
Okay.
There is one international boundary, though, that you can just about always see. If you're flying a southern route along the U.S.-Mexican border, land use changes on the border are very, very dramatic. And you can certainly see that. We have a great image of Mexicali, which shows the border.
Will it just be more lush generally north of the border and more burned off south of the border?
North of the border, we tend to have more irrigation. South of the border, we actually tend to have larger cities, if there's a city there at all. Juarez is much bigger than its American counterpart, and this runs true all up and down the
border. And that's just the maquiador, all the cheap industries, right?
Mostly it's the maquiadors.
Right.
That's right, Rick. They've brought a source of employment, which has drawn people.
So that sucks people right up to the border. Also, you can look out and you can see things from the sky that you wouldn't see really if you were driving around. There's these, you mentioned the ovals in North Carolina, the coastal plains there.
Right. These things were only first recognized by air photos, which I found surprising, but I looked into it and Dan looked into it. And even the topographic mapping that people were doing in the first part of the 20th century didn't reveal the geometry and orientation of these ovals, but they occur as ponds and they occur as low sags, which have been made for our agriculture, drained, and soils and placed on them. But the geometry of them is very peculiar. They are ovals. The long axis of the ovals are aligned in a specific northerly direction. And there are several arguments that are made as to their cause, and we really don't have a sound consensus.
So they're mysterious. They could be sort of UFO things or prehistoric things, or what made them? Tell us a little bit about those.
Well, there are two thoughts. One is that they might represent an asteroid or a meteorite shower hitting the Earth, and that would account for their geometry and their alignment. The other thought is that maybe they represent just typical wind patterns, maybe wind patterns that set up during the Pleistocene when the winds were perhaps stronger and the groundwater was quite different due to the different precipitation patterns.
Okay. And something a little less mysterious would simply be what you call the pizza farms.
The pizza farms. Yeah, that's Dan's term.
I like that term because when you drive around, you don't quite see it, but up above, you see these round green bits of farm country.
Right. This is a way of irrigating the land so that you don't use very much water. The idea is you typically have a pump in the middle of the field, which reaches an aquifer some distance below. There's a well there. And now you can run the water through these long arms and drop it with a very short fall from the nozzle to the ground of a few inches or maybe a foot. And you don't waste any water in this semi-arid country. And it makes for a very efficient means of irrigation, a very efficient use of water where water is hard to come by. But from the air, it gives you this astonishing pattern of large circles that go on forever.
So you're using water more efficiently, but you're not using a little bit of the land that's outside of the pizza.
That's true. There's the corners of the box.
The corners
of
the box.
And they're fallow.
I'm right. Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're speaking with Jim Jackson. And Jim and his partner Dan Matthews have written a fascinating and practical book called America from the Air, a guide to the landscape along your route. And it's basically a tool you take with you so when you're gazing out the window, you know what you're looking at. Now, you understand where the planes fly in the country, and you've broken it out to help us be more likely to have routes that we can follow. Tell us a little bit about that, Jim.
Well, basically, the FAA has set up what are essentially highways in the air, which are radar guided. And some routes, you will always fly exactly the same track. If you're going from New York to Washington, D.C., you will always go over Dover, Delaware. You're not going outside that corridor. If you're flying from Seattle down to L.A., you've basically got one route. You're going to go over Portland. The FAA has published maps which show these high-altitude corridors, and so we obtained those maps. But then we wondered, well, how frequently do the planes go over a specific route if there's more than one? So we used a variety of flight tracking software to track commercial flights. I compiled several hundred flights per day, and I did this for about 6 months. And then we placed these on maps in the book so that if you're flying from Atlanta to Miami, we have a yellow line, and that's where 90% of the flights go. The 10% that don't go on that line are probably being diverted due to thunderstorms. And so it's much less random where you go in the air than you might think. This has been the case now for, probably 50 years.
And it's because it's an economy to avoid the weather, and it's probably safer, too.
It's an economy to avoid the weather, and it's economy if you're going westbound to get with the jet stream, and if you're going eastbound to avoid the jet stream.
So a plane will fly 100 miles out of the way just to get a free hitch on the jet stream?
Absolutely. Yeah, they'll do that on the long-haul flights. The 3- and 4-hour flights, they have a lot of flexibility and they utilize it. But the short-haul flights, Washington to Chicago, New York to Chicago, New York to Atlanta, they don't have a lot of flexibility. And more often than not, if there's weather in the way, they just put the plane on the ground a little bit longer until that thunderstorm moves out of the flight path.
Now, in these big corridors, I guess there's two levels. It's like a double-decker highway, and just 1,000 feet is all you need clearance for planes flying the same route, basically, to go past each other in opposite directions?
Right. That's the vertical clearance. And then if they're flying in the same route in parallel, they're supposed to be 5 miles apart. And that's typically the case until you get into that final approach to the airport.
But vertical clearance, only 1,000 feet?
Yeah, you hope their altimeters are good, and they have been.
That's interesting. I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Jim Jackson, and Jim's written a practical book called America from the Air to help us know what we're looking at out the window of an airplane. Our phone number is 877-333-7425. You can email us anytime at radio@ricksteves.com. And Tony's on the line in Houston, Texas. Tony, thanks for your call.
Hey, no problem, Rick.
Yeah, do you have a comment for Jim about America from the Air?
This is more about Europe from the air, actually. If we can make that a subtopic. I was flying in the Air Force for several years, and one of the most awe-inspiring sights that I ever saw was I was flying from Prince Sultan Air Base in Saudi Arabia, which is south of Riyadh, up to England, to RAF Lakenheath, and we went just by Mount Etna in Sicily in the summer of 2003 when it was erupting, and it was just an awe-inspiring sight to see that from 31,000 feet. And it was awesome to me. I'd never seen anything like that, and in years of flying. Even at dusk, seeing the glow, it was just an amazing sight.
So what did it look like?
I guess it's kind of like you would imagine, the cauldron there. And I've been up to Etna myself on land, but seeing it from the air, you know, it was summer, so there was no snow, but, you know, this just dark mass, and then right in the middle, the bubbling lava and smoke, and then there were some streams coming down. 03 was a fairly strong eruption for Etna, so you had the rivers of lava coming down one side toward Catania, and it was a phenomenal sight to me.
It's not that rare to be in Sicily when it's at least smoking, and I've been there for an eruption, too, and it's quite a spectacular experience. Tony, have you flown around the United States much?
When I was in the Air Force, I flew E-3, which basically it's a 707 with a big radar frisbee on top for the uninitiated, and flying a lot of circles and orbits all over the country, and you get a chance to look out the window a lot and see the landscape. It's amazing. You get to where you can pick out sites, towns, I mean, everything.
At night, do you have a sense of what you're flying over at night, or is it just blackness down there?
I think over time, you know, when it's more the major metro areas of what you're doing, you just see the light and you kind of know what it is. The bigger cities, the sprawl out, your LAs and Atlantas and Dallas and Houston and those cities, you can recognize in a heartbeat. The Northeast, it's just a mass of light.
One of the most awe-inspiring sights I've ever seen from an airplane window was coming into Mexico City at night on a very crisp night. And the lights, you know, 10 million people or whatever it was back then. Lights just stretching forever.
It's an amazing phenomenon. And flying into cities like San Diego, into Lindbergh, a lot of passengers, you see, if they've never flown in there, when you're approaching over the city, you get close to the buildings, you see the mountains. It's interesting to see the looks on people's faces when they're coming into San Diego.
Because the airport's right there,
like
because it's right in the town. Jim Jackson, Tony's talking about volcanoes. Of course, you're probably not going to see Mount St. Helens erupting, but when you fly around the United States, what are the volcanoes and the special mountains to look out for?
The volcanoes are in the Northwest, at least the ones that we like that are really tall and that you will certainly see if the weather is decent. Flying out of Seattle, you'll likely see Baker and Glacier. You'll certainly see Rainier if the weather is at all good. And then coming south of Rainier, you'll go over St. Helens. And even today, decades later, the landscape north of St. Helens, where the mountain collapsed and knocked down the trees, it is still astonishing. It's a remarkable sight. And, of course, we put it on the cover of a book because of its strong presence.
Beautiful shot. Crater Lake is quite an outstanding sight from the air.
And you very often see Crater Lake. And south of that, you'll see Shasta. Often in the distance, you'll see Lawson. And at that point, you run out of volcanoes. The other region of a variety of volcanic edifices is in the Albuquerque to Denver area. You see them along the Rio Grande.
Hey, Tony, it sounds like you're in an airport there ready to get on an airplane. Where are you flying today?
Me? I'm flying from Houston to London and then catching a connecting flight to Sicily.
Now, you've flown Houston-London before. What do you anticipate seeing as you fly?
Well, this time I'm flying with my 5-month-old daughter for the first time, so pretty much we're going to be dealing with her and not looking out the window as much, so it'll be a new experience.
All right. Hey, thanks for your call, Tony, and
well,
good luck
you.
With your daughter on
Appreciate
the flight.
It.
Okay, bye now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Our guest, Jim Jackson, co-authored a clever guide with details about major buildings, stadiums, historic sites, and land features that you can see out the window of an airplane. His book, America from the Air, is organized by the principal flight paths across the USA. We have links with this week's show notes at ricksteves.com/radio. Jim, when you're flying, you're above the weather, aren't you? Airplanes are, what, around 28,000 feet?
28 to 30. Some of them get up to 40,000. The long-haul big jumbos will
is that
fly
right?
40,000. Yeah.
Why would they go so high?
Because they can. It gets them out of the low-level traffic and they're able to go a little bit faster.
The weather is usually far below that, right? All the clouds and
most of the time if you're at 40,000 feet, you'll see no clouds. They'll be below you. You won't be flying through them. In the late summer when you have the really big thunderstorms in the late afternoon, say up around Chicago, if you're at 40,000 feet, you might be at the tops or even below the tops of those big thunderheads, but they'll be off the wing. They won't fly through those because you get strong vertical air movements. And they do make a fantastic sight.
Anything that you particularly look for when you're looking at clouds?
I really look for changes in clouds. I want to see the ground, and I'm always hopeful that we'll pass out of this cloud bank and have clear air.
Let's talk about some specifics you're going to see. You can look down and actually see Corn Belt.
You can see the Corn Belt. It's an interesting area. It's Iowa, and it's an area with ample precipitation, so they don't need to do much irrigation. And the result is they use every square inch for either corn or the other crops, and your fields tend to form nice little squares or rectangles, little boxes.
University campuses.
Our campuses are typically based on a model of Oxford or Cambridge, and so they have quads. And the quads, of course, are lawns, which are surrounded by buildings. If it's on four sides, it's the Oxford model. If the quad has one side open with three sides of buildings, that's the Cambridge model.
And usually you can actually see the crisscross in the sidewalks, can't you, in the greens?
You usually can. That's right.
What about wind farms?
Wind farms occur primarily in the west at this time. They're often located downwind of a major pass. We used to see just a few in the Southern California region, but now we see them all over the place. I think we're seeing more of them in Texas than any place else in the country. We see them out there on the high plains.
Test tracks for cars.
Most of those you're going to find in the Detroit area. The most impressive one, I think, is the General Motors track, which is north of Detroit. And it has this amazing series of tracks which form a variety of interlocking, curving geometries.
Huh. Have you ever noticed all the baseball fields in the spring season area, Tempe and Phoenix?
Down there, you'll see them in the spring. They'll be green. Often they'll have people on them, and you won't find people on baseball fields anyplace else in the country. You know, if you're flying, say, in February.
Great reservoirs, the Lake Powell Reservoir and so on.
The great reservoirs usually are built where we have long valleys and areas of fairly high precipitation. So typically they're at the edges of mountain ranges rather than in the middle of them.
Our interstate highway system is quite impressive, and from the air you can see all these clovers and lots of infrastructure.
Yeah, highway engineers, they seem to enjoy the geometry of not just the clover leaf, but several other shapes, several other designs.
It's almost artistic from the air, I find.
Oh, some of them really are, yeah.
And, you know, I'm fascinated by advertising that's actually designed to be seen from airplane windows.
Indeed. As you're coming into most major airports, you'll see a lot of roofs have been let out to advertisers, and they'll be selling you any number of products.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. I've been quizzing Jim Jackson on what to look for from the air, and he wrote the book on it, America from the Air, A Guide to the Landscape Along Your Route. Jim, let's finish this off just by you explaining to us your favorite route when you're flying to look out the window anywhere in the United States.
Well, if I really had my choice of day and weather, I would fly from Seattle to Anchorage. It's about a four-hour flight, and it's one big mountain range after another. And you also get to see one of the most amazing coastlines in North America, really one of the most amazing coastlines in the world. It's marked by several areas of extensive glaciers coming out of the mountains into the ocean. It is just an amazing sight.
Wow, it sounds nice. Jim Jackson, thanks for writing America from the Air, and thanks for joining us today.
Oh, and thank you very much.
Next, we land in Flagstaff to hear how a local author includes the nearby Grand Canyon in her work to let us travel back in time and in our imagination. 877-333-RICK is our number at Travel with Rick Steves.